You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Atheistically Speaking, episode 129. Joining me today is Ben Bell. And Ben was one of few people behind a study by Idibon. Am I pronouncing that right?
Idibon, yeah, that's right.
And they did a study on the toxicity of different Reddit communities. And the results were maybe a little bit surprising, maybe not so surprising. It kind of depends on how you look at it. But one part of the results that atheists have, you know, had to, I guess, address or had to either accept or what have you, is that our atheism was third, I think, in some of the measures of toxicity, and I think even similar or higher on the measure of bigotry.
Yeah,
is that right?
It's like number five, I think.
Right. Yeah. Depending on which measure you were looking at. And so I decided to invite Ben on the show because I saw your name attached to the blog post, and I thought I'd try to, you know, get in contact with you and figure out what's going on here. So thank you for coming on the show, Ben.
Yeah, happy to be here. It's really exciting to see people show interest in our work and our study. It was definitely really fun for us to do, and I'm happy to talk about questions you have, any explain the results and methodology and so forth.
Awesome. Well, I will let people know that for whatever reason, we've had a weird connection happening, so hopefully we don't lose you on Hangouts, but we'll see how it holds up. But let's take it back just before we delve into the deep stuff of if you wouldn't mind going over a little bit of your background and how you came to be involved with Idibon at all. What was your education?
My background, the way that they came to be at Idibon, I'm currently a data scientist working on Idibon, where we solve machine learning problems specifically related to natural language processing. So we specialize in text. I got into data science after school. I worked for a management consulting firm called A.T. Kearney, and then did a data science program called ZipVNA Academy in San Francisco, where I gained kind of the skills that I feel today, and used those towards personal projects and so forth to build out my own portfolio. Basically learned a lot of the different machine learning techniques that are in use today. At Idibon, what we primarily do is work with clients to amounts of unstructured text data and provide them with machine learning solutions or business insights based on that text data. So it might be easier to explain a little bit kind of the problems that we solve.
Sure.
So classic problem that we would solve for a client would be if they have a lot of data that's coming in, text data, and they're trying to figure out how they should organize it or how they should sort it so that they don't have to read everything. So the classic thing is this relevant or is this irrelevant for us? So say we're working for a trading firm, and their analysts have to read tons of documents every day about is this things that will make their stocks go up or down, for example. And that's a kind of a very complicated problem to understand, is this relevant or is this not? And so we take advantage of annotations of those documents. And so we have the clients annotate those documents, 100 documents a day that they're reading. And we're trying to get that down to 20 of the most relevant things to try to improve their efficiency. So what we do is go ahead and have them annotate the different documents as relevant or irrelevant to their particular needs. And build out a machine learning model that can learn based upon those annotations which documents in the future are going to be most relevant for their particular needs. We also do things around topic modeling, which don't require any labeling. So just looking at a bunch of unstructured data and figuring out how it relates to itself. So given, you know, a client has this large amount of these large documents that are coming in, say it's tweets or it's articles or anything like that, trying to figure out what are the categories that they fit into, without even having them labeled them at all.
Wow. Sounds like real cutting edge stuff and definitely seems relevant in this day and age, especially so. How long have you guys been going? Were you there from the start? Did you, I wasn't sure if I made out in there when you got involved with Itiban or where it sounds like a newer company, right? Or
Itiban's been around for a couple of years. Started in 2012, I believe. Mm-hmm. Our co-founders are experts in crowd annotation. So they both have their PhDs in Stanford in linguistics. And they got their start, kind of the idea for Itiban came during actually the Haitian earthquake, when there was a ton of text data coming in. Everyone was sending SMS messages in French Creole. And so they needed to figure out a way to use that for effective disaster relief. And so they built this algorithm to basically use crowdsourcing to both translate those text messages as related to disaster relief or like specific areas of disaster relief so that those could be routed correctly. It's kind of out of that that the idea for the company came. And we all are also currently, so we work with kind of Fortune 500 clients. We also do a lot of international development work as well. So we're working with UNICEF right now on the U-Report program, and our lead NLP engineer, Jessica Long, is leading up that effort. And it's a similar thing where UNICEF sends out the U-Report program is they were initially intended for UNICEF to send out surveys to like kind of these remote areas of Africa because nobody has computers out there, but everybody has phones. And so they would get these U-Reporters and send them reports about how much water is there, et cetera, et cetera. But what they ended up happening was they ended up getting all of these inbound requests from people who were U-Reporters, just kind of not related to any survey, but you know, there's domestic violence in my village. Is Ebola coming to us? I heard this, I heard that. And they want to figure out a way how to respond to those. And so we're helping them both categorize that so they can respond to the different messages coming in from your report, but also just to kind of create an overall dashboard and understand like what are the themes, what's going on.
Hmm. So very broadly speaking, it's essentially trying to quantify language in a way, would you say? It's trying to use it, convert it to data that you can use, which is obviously very, very difficult because language is so fluid and Is it roughly speaking?
Yeah, so I'd say that's definitely an important aspect of it. But Itiban really focuses on kind of combining machine learning with humans.
Oh, right, yeah.
So like computers can't do everything for you, especially with text that's so complicated. So it's really about using machine learning to make our humans as efficient and effective as possible, make sure that like the data that we need is getting to the right people.
Right. Okay, so how did this this idea – now, this doesn't sound like anything you were doing for a Fortune 500 company, this Reddit survey. So how did this come up? Was it sort of maybe to develop visibility for Itiban, or was it just a random idea? How did that come up?
Absolutely. So Itiban has a very active blog. I don't know if you've had a chance to check it out, but we have dozens and dozens of articles that we write. And so we try to basically write one a week. It's just really a way for us to remain thought leaders in this space. And so we had another article that went viral a little while ago that was about the weirdest languages in the world, which Tyler did. He's one of the co-founders, kind of looking at all these variables of like what makes a language weird and then figuring out versus like something that's kind of conforms to the structures of languages that we see everywhere, and trying to figure out which ones are kind of the strangest. We had one recently about opening day in baseball and the sports statistics around that, which kind of are, and recently about the Like a Girl campaign with Dove and so forth. So we're constantly putting out content and trying to basically get visibility for ourselves, but also for just natural language processing generally, and to kind of keep the conversation going. Hmm. So it was kind of the way that this article came about was that I was looking to write a blog post, and I'm a huge Redditor myself, and so it was, you know, late at night on my phone on iReddit or Alien Blue, one of the two. I switched between them and was kind of scrolling through, and I saw this Ask Reddit thread about what popular subreddit has a really toxic community, and it was really interesting. I think it's something that's reposted pretty often, but was, I think, my first time seeing it. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is really interesting. Our parenting, like there are a ton of sanctimommies, people giving their different opinions was very interesting for me. And then it was just kind of very apparent immediately to me that this was basically exactly what we do at Itiban. It was very much in line with the kinds of things that we could bring our analytical capabilities to.
Right.
So basically came in the next day and started working on it.
That's awesome. It's pretty cool. It sounds like you have a lot of freedom at your job, huh? Kind of just, I'm going to work on this interesting question and see what happens.
I like my job a lot.
Yeah, it sounds pretty neat. Yeah. So it sounds like you read the initial Ask Reddit and thought, oh, that's interesting. And then, wait a minute, let's actually see if we can test this and see if we can come up with some objective measure of it, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So the question that they posed was what subreddit has a toxic community, or which popular subreddits have the most toxic communities? And people took that to mean a lot of different things.
We should talk about what the definition of that, what you went with on that.
Right. Yeah. So in the thread, there was everything from, they have really nasty mods that block everyone. Some that just like have values that we don't agree with. So like our makeup addiction was like, people are endorsing products too much, et cetera. But the kind of the themes that we saw throughout, kind of the most consistent themes were personal attack. This is a place where everyone is just really nasty to you. And then racism and bigotry. The process of doing this, so there was a couple, we tried to define what toxicity was in kinds of those ways. And as we went, kind of refined it further and further. So we ran a number of pilot studies, kind of saw how the results were coming out. Not the results, but rather like, I guess I need to get a little bit more into kind of how the study works.
Sure, please.
So what Itibon is really expert in, so we do a lot of machine learning and natural language processing, but the machine learning that we're doing is nothing special. And what we're doing is kind of the actual models that we're using are models that are used for lots of different companies, lots of different academics use these models. What makes us special and what makes our results unique and what gives us the competitive edge is that we're really, really good at crowdsourcing annotations. We're really good at getting the right data, getting the right labels for our data so that the machine learning models learn as effectively as they possibly can. Hmm. And so we do that through the crowd, which is we go online. There's a number of services that we use as far as getting thousands of people from around the world to annotate the documents. We have multiple ways of ensuring the quality of that. And we have our two co-founders wrote one of the seminal papers on how to use crowdsource annotations effectively in academia, which has a very, very high bar for quality. So we do that. That's one of the things we do. We also have expert annotators from around the world that we use, especially for translation. And then we also work with our clients if it's something very niche, like if we're working with stock analysts, where we really need them to be the ones annotating. But that's how we kind of go through our process of getting the data that we need for our models. And so for this, for the Reddit annotations, what we did was I went online and I wrote up basically instructions for our annotators to go through. All right, let me start from the beginning. So first, I pulled 1,000 comments from every subreddit that was mentioned both in the thread and then just the top 250 subreddits. And then I narrowed that down using a sentiment model that we already had, just a stock sentiment model. And that was just kind of a way to make sure that we couldn't have the crowd annotate absolutely everything because it would have been an enormous number, just enormously expensive, just an enormous number of man hours. And so we narrowed it down from those 1,000 comments to 100 comments per subreddit using a sentiment analysis tool so that we basically said, here are like the most positive and the most negative comments. And then we also took a random subset of comments as well so we could compare.
So that's the 100 you took, you're dividing those between, and this is what, this was computer identified so far. Right? Or have you human annotated?
This is all computer identified. Okay. So this was...
The first step is, right?
Sentiment analysis is... we have basically built a machine learning model that can identify whether something has negative sentiment or positive sentiment or no sentiment attached to it. And it's not something that's perfect, and we wouldn't use it to actually label data, especially since the model wasn't trained on Reddit data.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the important things with these models is that they're very domain specific, right? But we used it as a way to just narrow down the
screening process, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's basically this implicit assumption, or it's our explicit assumption as part of our study, that our sentiment model basically treated all the different subreddits equally. And that not one subreddit is going to be very like disadvantaged by how our sentiment model went about choosing things, which I think is a pretty fair assumption.
Right. Okay.
So then once we did that, we put these online, physically take out all the metadata, just have the comments. So our annotators, they can't see what subreddit it's from. They can't see like what's the name of the thread or anything like that. They just see the comment and they have to decide, is this toxic or is this not toxic? And we actually split it out amongst a couple of different questions for them. So this is what I was saying. We ran a couple of pilots first on a few subreddits using like a subset of data and just are basically looking at annotator agreement, like how basically are people annotating correctly or are there like consistent problems? And so we did a couple of iterations through this and revised the description of the task as we went and basically came down to this following. I can actually pull this up.
Oh, that'd be great.
But basically, we have them answer two questions. The first question is, well, three questions. So the first question is, let me give you this. So the overall toxicity would be defined as personal attack or completely non-constructive argument, but directed at someone. And then bigotry, which is the use of bigoted language or like extremely hateful speech towards a group. Either of those things would be defined as toxic. And so when we asked the annotators how to handle this, what we did was we asked them two different questions. I'm just going to pull this up so I get this right. So the first one is the person who wrote this comment speaking directly to a particular person or group of people? And so that was a way to make sure that for the first part of toxicity, we got this right. They answered yes. Then we asked, does this commenter address the person in a toxic, neutral, or supportive way? And then we're very clear about this is how they're talking toward the person they are addressing. So it's only like, you know, am I saying you suck versus like Drew Carey sucks? That Drew Carey sucks is not toxic. You suck is toxic, right? And so we give like a number of different examples. So toxic would be directly attacking the commenter or the poster or showing contempt for the commenter, which would be like using sarcasm or not necessarily just sarcasm, but showing, so it says, like, one of the examples is, like, how do you know that all Muslims are forced to wear this? Like, how the fuck do you know anything? Like, have you asked them? Can you, like, any of this stuff? So it's, like, very directly
confrontational,
attacking the person. Yeah, confrontational, but really just showing that you don't respect their opinion.
Okay.
The idea, and, like, the whole idea here is that we're trying to, that's basically what we're trying to get out of this is, like, are you respecting this person's opinion or not? Okay. If I'm someone who disagrees with your opinion, would I feel like, oh, well, this isn't a place that a community that I want to be a part of versus, oh, this is a place where I can actually have a conversation with someone.
Hmm.
And that's kind of like the root of what we're trying to get at.
Was there also a separate bigotry judgment then, or am I getting that? So this was just the toxicity one you described.
Yeah. So this is, and then we split out bigotry into a separate question.
Okay.
Just to make it like as clear as possible. You answer this one, then we have bigotry, and that's how we're able to get like our bigotry graph that's separate from the toxicity one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we basically could break it down into those two compartments and then sum them up and so forth.
This is just comments. This wasn't the original post. It's just comments on posts or comments on comments.
Yeah, just comments on posts and comments on comments.
Okay.
Right? So we pulled all the comments that were when you click on a thread, every comment that appears, that you would see like on your first look before you click like get more comments or anything like that. That's everything that we captured. And it was from the front page of the site.
Oh, okay. That was my next question is, did you factor in upvotes and downvotes at all? Or is that implicitly factored into this top page stuff?
We did.
Okay.
We did it. We did actually. And so that was one of the really interesting parts about doing this on Reddit. Is that Reddit has this upvote and downvote system, which shows you kind of not only what people are saying, but how the community is viewing what people are saying. So that's like very, very important when we're trying to figure out, is this a toxic community or is this not? Like one bad actor doesn't make a toxic community.
Sure.
But if you have bad actors that are then upvoted to the top by everyone, that's a sign that the community as a whole is pretty toxic. And so the way we did that is we took the log of the source and summed those up and took like what percentage of those log scores were toxic or were supportive, or et cetera. And that's just because scores are distributed exponentially. So like you don't want something that has 1,000 upvotes to be worth 1,000 times as much as something with 1 upvote.
Oh, sure. So, yeah. Okay. Is that because when something gets attention, it starts getting more and more votes?
It's just the distribution of the scores.
Okay.
And so you're basically taking an exponential distribution and turning it into a linear distribution so that you have the things that are like most valuable, the things that are like the highest upvotes still are worth more than everything else.
Right. You're just leveling that out.
Not by like an enormous amount so that you're not like totally discounting everything else. Right.
Gotcha.
Because otherwise you would have subreddits that have like one bad comment with like a lot of upvotes and they would be like at the ground, right? If that's like all of their upvotes.
Sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. We split up bigotry into a separate question, which was using bigoted language, even if it's not targeted at a specific person, or targeting a specific group with extremely hateful speech. So that's kind of how we broke it down.
Did you define bigoted language or was that just they would know what it meant?
I gave numerous examples that I don't want to say on the air. And I said racist, homophobic, sexist, etc.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you have to spell it out to that level because you're sending this through some annotation site and you don't know who is getting it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So this is what we do, right? We're dealing with kind of anonymous annotators. And you need to make things as clear as possible. So I can get a little bit more into the kind of the safeguards that we use to ensure quality. So first we have pilots, which I talked about. The second major thing we use is called gold or gilding, which is in the annotation world means basically test questions that you annotate yourself.
Right.
So I have 10,000 comments on here. About 200 of them, I personally annotated. And basically said, all the annotators, they get, before they even start annotating, they have to answer 8 out of 10 of these right, or otherwise they can't even start. And then once they start annotating, it was like every
you throw
10 or
one
15
in there.
Comments.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, and you have to keep getting them right, or you'll get kicked off, and everything that you've done is gonna not count.
It's really cool.
So this is just kind of like best practice things that we do. To ensure the quality. And then once we get our quality, we also can figure out kind of what's our confidence in each of these answers and what's our confidence in the different annotators based on kind of how they responded, how they agreed with each other and so forth. But
let me ask you, based on you said you were a Redditor. I'm wondering what you personally learned from this. Were there any communities that you were a part of or that you subscribed to that you learned something about? Or what did this, how did this affect you in your Redditing, I wonder?
Sure. I mean, I definitely got to do a little bit of a deeper dive into the darkest side of Reddit that I hadn't seen a ton of. So there are certain subreddits that I had to look at, and I spent a lot of time looking at Reddit comments. So our shit Reddit says came up on top, which was something that, while not totally surprising, wasn't exactly what I expected because it's a subreddit that's devoted to finding bigoted comments around the site and talking about them.
Interesting.
But it's also, so it's a kind of a hyper-feminist subreddit. And at first I thought there must be some mistake, and then I went and looked at the data, and really it's a lot of people kind of treat – it's very much a lot of the – so they're very, very hostile towards Reddit as a whole, which was really interesting. So like the term Redditor is used as an insult often in comments and is used that way and with kind of surrounded by that sort of language. So it was kind of a very hostile response to the hostile things that they're seeing around them. But then there were a lot of other just blatantly really nasty subreddits like our Tumblr in Action, which is dedicated basically to finding Tumblr posts and mocking them. And Tumblr is, and specifically, generally, Tumblr posts around people from the LGBTQ community. It's kind of a place, it has a very strong presence in the queer community. And it's basically, this subreddit is entirely devoted to mocking those people. And then you have the red pill, which is the chauvinistic subreddit, talking about, you know, taking the red pill versus believing in women's rights or anything like that. So Yeah, so it's a pretty there's a lot of
yeah. So you've been to hell and back, I guess. Yeah, I admit I don't know much about any of this. I tried to. It must have been a lot of research for you because, you know, I didn't know anything about shit Reddit says, the red, you know, I wouldn't have known any of this. It's really specific, huh? It's like they're each one has its own culture and the explanations of it. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Totally. I mean, Reddit is just a platform for communities, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's thousands and thousands. There's like 500 created a day or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, and some of them are very, very small and don't make it anywhere, and some of them take off. And there are – one of the things I actually – some of the responses I got was like, why didn't you include these other subreddits? Because there are other subreddits that are just way worse than anything I looked at.
Right.
There are like just blatantly racist ones. There's a subreddit that's like r, like watch people die. There's like terrible stuff on Reddit. And I mean, the reason was just that we chose the top 250 subreddits to go with, plus the ones that were in the thread. But I mean, I guess my point is that it's a vast platform, a vast community of communities. And so there's going, it's basically like a cross section of the internet itself.
Yeah. And it's important to look at the, you know, the most popular ones. You have limited resources. I mean, you're not going to spend all your time on a community that has five people in it that are incredibly toxic. Sure. It's not worth it. So that makes sense.
And also I just didn't want to be picking and choosing. It was more a matter of just being consistent. And like trying to choose like an approach and go with it rather than anything else. But but that's also one reason why I wanted to look at supportiveness, because I didn't want to just do a study that was all about how nasty everything was. And so one of the gratifying things about doing this study was seeing some of these subreddits that were picked out as like our Get Motivated, our Libertarian was like really excited about where they were. Our Eat Cheap and Healthy. I think the most upvotes we got was our Eat Cheap and Healthy, which was like, we had some ridiculous, like 15,000 upvotes. They were just saying, yay, we're so great. That's nice to see.
What's with our libertarianism? So they got a good score or they?
So this is one of the interesting things that came out of it was they were just very, very neutral. So they came out as being. So on our, if you look at the chart, which is on in the blog post, we have kind of supportiveness.
I'll definitely link it in the show, by the way. Check out the
Our top right corner is like the most toxic stuff and least supportive. And the bottom left is the most supportive and the least toxic. And that's what most people look at. But there's also this other spectrum, which is the bottom right and the top left, which are kind of the bottom right is the most extreme emotionally or kind of the most controversial. And then the top left. Those are the ones that are both very supportive and very toxic. And then our top left is like very little supportiveness or toxicity. And that's where our libertarian fell.
Oh, I see.
Was that they were just talking about politics and they weren't getting into heated arguments and they weren't being super nice to each other, but they weren't being super mean to each other either. Or being super racist or anything like that. So that's where they fell, and they were excited to kind of feel vindicated by that. And then the other one that we see, like the one that's in the closest to the bottom right, we have our relationships. Which is, on the one hand, people being like, oh, good for you. Like, you're going to do great. Right. Like, whatever. And then the other one is like, you need to leave them. Like, they're doing terrible. Whatever. So it's kind of – so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, no, that's funny. So what role did mods play in this? Do you know anything about that? I know that people talked a lot about, well, this is heavily moderated versus this isn't. Can you speak about that at all?
Sure. So – I guess the judgment of the comments. So I guess the way that moderators could play a role was by they're the ones, they can delete comments, etc. They can ban people for making toxic comments, breaking the rules of the subreddits, and they write the rules of the subreddits, right? So as far as like they're not going to directly affect these scores like in one way or another. They're not going to be like going through and deleting 50% of the things so that we're getting like totally different results for them. But they are creating a culture within those subreddits. And I think that they're the ones that have more power than anyone to kind of change the dynamics that are going on in some of these subreddits. So I talked about our Tumblr in action recently. And if you go on their site and look at their rules, It's pretty horrifying. The things that the mods have written, which is basically like, you know where the line is between mocking someone who has actual experiences and someone who doesn't have actual experiences. And kind of putting it in the hands of the community to decide.
I don't even know what that means. What does that mean?
Right. Mocking. Well, the implication is that people that they're mocking, the people that are like minorities or are marginalized, they're just kind of whining and not, they don't really have real experiences. They're not really upset over anything that's legitimate.
Huh.
Because the people that are in this privileged group aren't able to identify with that. And basically is saying, you know, if you can identify with the kind of problems that someone's having, then it's okay. But if you don't, then you know, you shouldn't make fun of them. But if you don't, then you can totally make fun of them, which is a pretty problematic way to see the world. And also kind of creates this echo chamber within these communities where people kind of, there's these implicit understandings of what's okay and what is not within a community that's a privileged group that isn't being checked by anyone else.
And this was the one where they're finding Tumblr pictures to make fun of. That's all it is.
Oh, not just Tumblr pictures, like
posts. Oh, Tumblr posts. Oh, okay.
Like somebody, I looked at it like a few days ago, and the top post was like somebody writing on a form that it was like a form where you have to put down your sex, and someone was like, "This is like transphobic to just have like male and female, or it was gender, I guess."
Oh, I see.
And, you know, this is the top, and the whole comments are just people being like, why can't they just understand that, like, they're just not normal? Yeah, like, that kind of stuff.
That one got a lot of upvotes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
That's funny. All right. Well, that's the end of part one of the interview. Very interesting stuff about Reddit communities and toxicity. I think there's a lot for us to digest here. And there's more in part two, where we're going to talk specifically about our atheism. And I hope people know I'm saying R, like the letter R/ as in the Reddit. I keep hearing that and thinking I'm saying our atheism, like, you know, O-U-R. But anyway, no, our atheism, the subreddit. We talk a lot more about that. And I am really looking forward to what you guys think about all this. So, on Thursday, I will be back with part two of this interview, and we get more into depth, and we can really see what this means for atheism, if anything, what it means for our atheism, and so on. So please, let me know with your comments so far what you think. And of course, after the next part too, I want to remind people about the Atheistically Speaking Book Club. I've got enough volunteers, so it's already, the idea is officially on. I want to give it a little more time in case more people want to join. So email me. This is important. I'd prefer if we go email atheisticallyspeaking@gmail.com. So that way I can round everybody up into one group email. And then we can, I don't know, maybe we want to start a Facebook page. I don't know what we want to do, but one way or the other, we should vote on our first book, and then we can kind of set the timeline for it, you know, have comments with discussion, all that. It'll be great. And in the end, my goal is to be able to do an episode where we summarize the book for people who haven't read it and really get into any sort of thoughts or arguments that the book inspires. So I'm really excited about that. So make sure to email me, atheisticallyspeaking@gmail.com, if you'd like to be in that group. Again, the group is already enough. It's already enough people, so it's definitely happening. So, okay. And I guess with that, I will see you guys on Thursday. Thanks so much for listening, as always. Thanks so much for supporting at patreon.com/atheist. And thanks for... I can't think of a third thing. See you Thursday.